Hello and welcome to Bat Flips and Nerds, the baseball podcast with a British twist. And I am your host for this week's MLB Roundup, John McGee. Before I introduce my fellow podcast pals for this week, just a reminder that if you haven't listened to it already, to go away. And before you listen to this, download the interview that we had with Keith Law from earlier this week. There's far more insight in that than there'll ever be in this rubbish. That's not what this is all for, which is a really good segue and entry to introduce the two gentlemen who are joining me this evening to have a peruse around all things Major League Baseball. First of all, it's the man with the computer in his brain. It's Russell Easom. How are you?
Not too bad. John, yourself?
Very, very well. And also joining us is the man with one of Bill Gates' computer chips now inside his arm, freshly this afternoon. It's Darius Austin. How's vaccinated life?
It's going okay so far. No significant side effects to report, so that's good. I decided the only way that I could match Russell's sabermetric analysis was to have a chip implanted, so got myself down to the old vaccination centre.
Yeah, hopefully 85% of people in your local area have been vaccinated and you can now have special permission to remove your mask in your dugout.
I think we're pretty close, actually, in Conwy. We're right up there, so yeah, not long.
Excellent news. We're not anywhere near close enough in Manchester, I hate to say. For those of you who have not listened to these podcasts before, we pick a few topics each week to have a bit of a fulsome chit chat about, and then pick some things that have particularly caught our eye, both on the good end of things and the bad end of things in baseball. So we'll start. Where else would we start? I mean, Tom and I literally recorded a full podcast about this, because there's only one place to start, and that's with the fact that pitching and the domination of pitching has kind of got silly to the point where Wade Miley, a man who is a perennial favorite of this podcast, not because he's a good pitcher, but because he's a good snake wrangler come cow milker. I mean, he is a good pitcher. Sometimes the fact that's overlooked, threw a no-hitter last week. Extraordinary times in this sport. Russell, I'm going to come to you first. You're our great analytic mind here on this side of the pond. What on earth is going on?
Well, I think we have a bunch of extenuating circumstances, which kind of gets us into a glorious case where we're probably going to have 10 to 12 no-hitters this season. We have, pitchers are throwing harder, faster, and I think you can also say things like tunneling and other things. Like, there's so much R&D that has been done on the pitching side, and they keep on getting better. And because of, also from the other side of the analytics, we've kind of worked out that hitting a baseball, it's better if you can hit a baseball for a home run than you can if you hit it for a single. So, and because that means that it doesn't matter if you strike out a few times, if you get that home run, batting average is really low now, because it's not something that teams care about compared to kind of like on base percentage and slugging and other sides. So something that used to be a rarity because balls got put in play fairly often is now not a rarity because balls are getting put in play less often, and players are striking out more. So we get this, what in most circumstances you just be like, it's really interesting, but then also it's completely not interesting. Like, I didn't care like 2 weeks ago. When it's harsh on memes, but as soon as I worked out that it wasn't a perfect game, I was like, I don't really care. Like, we crave that perfect game now, because there are walks, there are errors in some of these things, and there are more works in sometimes and now than we have in historically. So for me, I'm craving that perfect game, and anything that isn't that is just boring.
Is it not amazing, though, that there've now been four hitters, five actually, under your definition, Russell, which I also co-opt, there've been one walk in the 4-9 inning, one walk. It's crazy that there've been two perfect games broken up by hit by pitches and one by, was it catcher's interference? The other one that
drop third strike.
It is. I mean, has it become run-of-the-mill Darius? Are we all as inured to this as Russell is? Is it just, is he right? Are there going to be 10 no-hitters this year and it's just because of the evolution of the game? Or is it just we're seeing amazing baseball players do amazing things and we should just condition ourselves to the fact that it happens more often now?
I think the balance is threatening to shift too far over. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that we appreciate about these is that they're not unique, but uncommon. It's like, you know, an exclusive club. And if we get to September this year and somebody throws the 11th no-hitter, I don't know if anybody's going to say it's an exclusive club anymore, especially if the club includes Wade Miley, who, you know, all credit to Wade, is a very solid major league pitcher, but it's not sheer dominance. Cleveland has obviously been hit no-hit twice already. That might say something about the quality of the opposition.
And Seattle by John Means, who, you know, that almost feels like it was a triple-A no-hitter, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You're talking about teams with very good records right now as well, which is hilarious, but they can't hit.
Yeah, and I just think once this moves this far, this is a symptom of a wider problem. But if we have 10, 11, 12 no-hitters, people aren't going to care as much, and that's not very much fun. I think that indicates that something has maybe gone a little bit wrong with the balance in the game.
Is it a problem, though? You know, is it a problem? Because you're beginning to sound a bit like Jeff Fry, and that's not a place you want to find yourself.
I suppose it depends what you like. I mean, I guess if you went into every baseball game thinking all I want to see today is a pitcher dominate, then it's great, right?
Every day.
Yeah.
Then come on, the truth is that is why we all watch this game. Everyone starts watching this game for the dingers, right? And then they want to watch it because they want to. I mean, look, you know, I basically don't watch baseball anymore because of Pitching Ninja. I just watch his thread.
Yeah, it's things like these there are amazing things, but these aren't like the best pitchers that are doing this. This isn't Jacob deGrom. This isn't Garrett Cole. This isn't Shane Bieber who are throwing these no-hitters, no matter how well they're pitching. Like, they, in some of the circumstances, don't nibble around the edge and they just allow the odd hit get given up because they can get more strikeouts and be more effective. So pitching a no-hitter, even though it's good for the team, I think the methodology about how you go about it doesn't give you the best results over a long period. So is it fun to watch most of the times? Yeah. If it was my team and one of my like pitchers was doing it, I'd be really up for it, kind of going to it, really enjoying it. But it's getting close to being like cycle territory for me, where it's like...
Not a real thing, yeah.
Yeah, if we're here like, oh, well, they've got a no-hitter through seven or whatever, is that going to be the new triple away from a cycle, or where it's like, we're going to hear it every single day in Major League Baseball. And so it's not... The act itself is not diminished. Like, all of this is a fantastic achievement by all of them. It's just that we talk about them so much that they lose their like veneer.
So I've got a question for you two. Tom and I struggled ludicrously to think about, you know, who else we would want to see throw a no-hitter, to the point where I just about caught myself in time after trying to think of the most moribund pitcher who could possibly throw a no-hitter and mentioning Mike Fiers, who, of course, has done it twice of all the people that came out of my mouth. Who would be more moribund as a pitcher to throw a no-hitter than Wade Miley? Is it even possible? Because, you know, at least Carlos Rodon, you know, he's a lot better this season than he's ever been, but had potential always to be very good. Joe Musgrove, potential always to be very good. John Means has been very good for 3 years. Well, you know, who's going to be a more moribund no-hitter thrower than Wade Miley?
I brought up Antonio Senzatella in the chat, I think, shortly after this. You know, I, especially if it was in cause, I think. That would be the most shocking thing to me. If pitcher who doesn't get many strikeouts, hasn't been particularly good, throws no hitter in cause. I feel there's got to be like just guys, Jose Urania, like just, you know, the Tigers pitching staff, basically. People yeah. like that. They're definitely Eric Fedde on the Nationals. Just guys who don't really get strikeouts, who, you know, have one of those 4K, 3 walk, but somehow all their hits find gloves. kind of days.
I think I was, when you guys mentioned that, I was going more to like the territory of the players that went to like the KBO and or like MPB and came back. So like Merrill Kelly, Mike McAleese, like Chris Flexen, like those sorts of players, like any one of those doing it, I think would be fantastic. I think, yeah, when you, then you just get down to the real, just almost like thinking if somebody who's not a good pitcher does it. So something like Mike Fortuneo, which like JT, like Brubaker or something like that. And you're like,
hey, JT Brubaker is good now. You leave him alone.
Dean Kramer, like anyone else who's in that Orioles rotation who's not
here's,
John Mitz.
Here's one for Russell, Adam Plutko. How about him?
That would be hilarious because, like,
he's a reliever. He's a reliever now.
Well,
he is now, but
that's like the, to me, it's like if Josh Tomlin did it. It's like he was very useful in his moments, but then just utterly awful at other times. And so you just don't think that thing, that anything's going to happen. Otherwise, I think the only one that makes me it want to actually happen is Eduardo Rodriguez, just because then that's like cementing the comeback player of the year. It's like this dog versus dog fight between him and Trey Mancini about I'm like, both of them are completely and utterly yeah, you should 100%, the single answer to this is just do a joint one, but if he got a no-hitter he's
yeah.
Trey Mancini's got to get his four home run game or whatever to compete.
Can I be honest with you? As someone who sat through many, many multi-foul ball Eduardo Rodriguez 3-2 counts, not happening. Okay, so let's move on. Not quite change topic, but stay on the same topic and talk about one pitcher. And I want to get your sense. So Gerrit Cole is amazing. And because Jacob deGrom is so amazing, and because Walker Buehler is so amazing, and because, you know, the Trevor Bowers of this world hog the airspace when it comes to talking about brilliant pitchers, he's kind of taken for granted, you know, until yesterday when he became the second youngest pitcher to get to 1,500 Ks. Is that diminished because of the timeline that we're operating here, or is that still a really cool thing and a nice moment for a guy that's kind of been forgotten about, oddly enough, as the most highly paid pitcher of all time until this time in, you know, November?
I think for Cole, it doesn't diminish it at all for me, because I can watch Gerrit Cole and just be like, his stuff is all ridiculous and he's clearly an ace. And I feel like he would be dominating regardless of the environment. So it doesn't affect it for me. All of his numbers are ludicrous. It's not just like you don't look at Wade Miley's numbers and go, wow, Wade Miley's got great numbers. I sort of undersold him. He's like got fine numbers and he had a no-hitter. But Gerrit Cole looks like somebody who probably should have thrown a no-hitter and strikes everybody out and looks like an ace. So not for me, I don't think.
Yeah, he's kind of shown so far this year season like the being the top-notch pitcher, which can go deep on numerous occasions. So I think only Bieber's pitched more innings than him, like so far this year, especially out of the people who've done like 8 games. So he looks really good. I think he's just a quiet individual, seemingly. Like he isn't entertaining off the field. So he doesn't get the same limelight that some of the others do. Like the whole DeGrom stuff, like DeGrom to me doesn't really say much to the media that would kind of pull him out. It's just lol Mets is why we all talk about DeGrom. So, and then obviously Bauer is Bauer. He pushes his own agenda. But not many of the other top pitchers actually kind of are out there kind of saying, look at me, look at me. I wouldn't say like Yu Darvish does that, but I would say he communicates like using Twitter quite well to kind of like talk about those sorts of things, especially using Pitching Manager, as you've discussed before. So, and maybe a little bit with like Tyler Glasnow. But I think a lot of the pitchers are quite reserved. So maybe that's actually just something about being a pitcher at the major league level.
Yeah, I guess so. So just sort of transitioning away from Cole, disappointingly, and you know, we were asked to talk about this by our really good friend Robin Davidson. the crap Yankees are no longer the crap Yankees, are they? You know, behind Cole, they have unsurprisingly found their way a little bit. I mean, the fact that Rougned Odor is no longer playing every day, Jay Bruce is not at first base so often as he was. But yeah, I mean, this is just talent finding its level, isn't it?
Yeah, there's. I almost feel like there isn't anything kind of like much more needed to say to that. It's like you have like Corey Kluber like pitching relatively well. You've got like Jordan Montgomery has looked fairly reasonable. Chapman still hasn't given up an earned run in 15 games.
Chapman is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, he gets better. And then Stanton. I mean, I heard you guys talking about Stanton last week. I'm so happy that he's good again. Like, I know he plays for the team that I'm supposed to hate, but like, he is phenomenal. That guy looks exactly what an athlete is supposed to look like and does what an athlete is supposed to do, except he used to get things like ingrowing toenails and stuff to the point where it was a joke. Like, Giancarlo Stanton being amazing is just amazing for baseball. And also, he's called Giancarlo fucking Stanton. Like, you can't get any cooler than that. I'm just delighted to see that guy raking. It's brilliant.
Yeah, Stanton is, when you're talking about people who are unique on a baseball field, like, it doesn't really come any better than Stanton, right? Like, he definitely looks like he fell into the wrong sport.
It looks like just a linebacker, right? You're like, it's just ridiculous.
It's just so much fun, you know, when he makes hard contact. You don't really see anything else like it. And yeah, with him and Judge on the same team, and now Voit's back, and obviously LeMahieu, totally different kind of hitter, but, you know, no less difficult to face. It's just a really great lineup. And yeah, Chapman's striking out like 60% of batters this year. So insane.
Judge, Voit, and Stanton, they look like the baddies in He-Man that used to stand behind Skeletor.
It feels weird because it's not maybe an exact like crossover, but to me it reminds me of like the West Indies cricket team when you have like Chris Gayle, Kyron Pollard, and like Dwayne Bravo, where you just have these guys that are playing the game differently to everybody else, especially like when T20 first came out, and they were just hoiking the ball like massive sixes, and everybody was like, oh, is this how we play this short form game? We actually like use our core on our body. But yeah, watching Stanton hit is just glorious. That sound is just beautiful.
And that makes Chapman and Cole at Curtly Ambrose and Corny Welsh as well, doesn't it? I nearly said firing bullets there, like quite involuntarily. So I think we'd better move on. And of course, Chapman did it involuntarily too. Don't want to get sued. Okay, moving away from that to something rather more dispiriting, if there's anything more dispiriting than the wiles of Aroldis Chapman. And that's, just don't really know where to start with this. Just what is going on in Oakland? Absolutely dispiriting, dismaying, desperate, awful chicanery, shenanigans and naffness from absolutely everyone involved. The Oakland Athletics ownership and front office, just rotten. The local council leading them up the garden path and maybe not allowing them to, you know, come to an agreement. It's, you know, that they are more innocent than the club themselves. And honest to God, is this what Major League Baseball's organization is for now? To shill round to cities around the country to try and find the best sweetheart deal for a billionaire? Awful. It's absolutely wretched. Like, I don't have anything else to say about that. I don't know if you guys want to pick up the thread. I just feel really, really sorry and sad for all of the A's fans. We've got so, so many of them here. No fans in the UK more committed to the city, the place and the spirit of the club. And absolutely, let's make no bones about it. The spirit of that brilliant baseball club comes from the authentic people that live in that city. It's just, and to see them just used as pawns in a a chess game of pathetic multi-billionaires is just so sad.
Well, I think the question you asked in the middle there is this what we should expect of the MLB, and the answer is yes. I don't think expansion is on the horizon in the short distance. I think Dave Dombrowski leaving the Nashville bid and taking control of the Phillies when he was pretty much adamant that he wasn't going to, I think he got told by somebody or a few people that they don't want to expand. And I think obviously people are like, oh, there's money in the expand. Yeah, they get a cash injection. But then the second part of it is they have to share the pie out between like let more people. So they get less annually afterwards. So you've got your finance people out there. You've got your OPEX and your CAPEX. Like, which one do they want to actually have? And if they actually expand, then you lose the leverage of, well, we could move to this location. So with Tampa, with Oakland, these are, while there hasn't been the expansion, these teams can still use the leverage of, we could go to somewhere to make sure they get more public funding. And that's the state of affairs. And if you've got something that could be described as a corporate bully, I'm pretty certain MLB is one of the biggest ones that's out there that could do this. So, yeah, it's not a good look, but also it's baseball. This has been baseball for decades. This is baseball.
Yeah.
Like stiff-arming local councils and governments to give them money and then still fucking off a few years later. Sorry.
Well, we're already well over putting that explicit tag on this
time,
week.
Timestamp that one. Yeah.
Well, I've already done it. I was there 10 minutes ago. And you know, when you've got me and you've got Russell, you're fucked from the start. You just thought I'd drop another one in there for special measure. I mean, Darius, I mean, you may have some illuminating and thoughtful counterpoint devil's advocatory here. I don't anticipate it, but you know, if you have, go for it. But otherwise, I feel like I don't want to talk about this anymore. It's fucking shit. And I kind of feel like it's better if we just move on from it.
Yeah, not anything really devil's advocacy to say. It's so hard to tell how much genuine sentiment is behind some of this. You know, they talk about being committed to staying in Oakland. It does make a bit of a mockery of the whole rooted in Oakland thing when suddenly it's like, oh, we're not going to get the money we want for our stadium, so let's move somewhere else. It doesn't really work. But yeah, this is the playbook. This has been going on for a while. We've seen this recently in Atlanta, for example, you know, getting taxpayer money for a nice new stadium. I mean, when you think about the Giants were very close to leaving San Francisco in the 90s, which seems really insane when you think about it now. But, you know, they tried this too. Their ownership had a good go at almost leaving, and it very nearly happened. We might not have the San Francisco Giants now. So, yeah, this happens a lot, and people talk about the Coliseum being dreadful. I've been to the Coliseum. It was my first Major League game. I had a great time. I understand that the A's would like a nicer facility, and that they don't maybe have as much money as other major league teams. But also, I don't really think this is worth blowing up your fan base and just causing a lot of strife over basically, you know, getting a new real estate development, which I think is what all these things are motivated by now.
Also, no one wants to play baseball in the middle of the fucking desert. Don't take my word for it. Take the words of former New York Mets AAA players who hated it. The only person who wants Major League Baseball to happen in the desert is Tom Pringle, because he regularly visits Las Vegas as part of his army details, whatever it is that he does. Okay, let's get away from that absolute scrow, and let's move on to the real meat and drink of this podcast, which is our too good, too bad. So if you've not listened before, and have never seen Match of the Day 2, the UK Sunday Night Football Roundup show from which we have shamelessly stolen this segment. We're going to focus on two bad things that annoyed us, things that were crap, funny, irritating in baseball this week, and two things that we enjoyed immensely. So we'll start with the bad so that we end on a good. Russell, what's your first bad for this week?
It's the Detroit Tigers. It's like, I was really wondering if I was going to go down this line or not, because it just it feels like kicking a kid while it's down or whatever. Or, but I didn't anticipate them being this bad. I know, like, Jed will tell us that, like, we were more optimistic probably on them than any of the Detroit Tigers fans were. But I thought Mize and Scooble would come up and be relatively useful arms, which I think Mize has had a reasonable season so far. Scooble, not so much. But that offense is awful. It's truly awful. And when you, like, when you look at some of the lineups and you go, like, it's gag reflex. It's not as gag reflex as that bloody Angels lineup from last night, which when you think about the players that they have, that what that lineup looked like, it was Ohtani, sick emoji, Walsh, then six more sick emojis. But it's a little bit depressing just to see the Detroit not kind of get their way, work their way back up into kind of like that division. I was hoping for it because I genuinely thought the division could have had like five teams that aren't actually too far away from each other, but it doesn't look like it.
I mean, they are like the I'm just pulling up Fangraphs here. Their offense is historically terrible, isn't it? Like, haven't they got? I'm sure I was reading this or heard this that they've got like four players on like minus half WAR.
We said that last week, in fact.
Oh, you said that last week. There you go. I knew I'd heard somebody saying it. It was you, because you were talking about Miguel Cabrera and how poor he's been. I mean, when your offensive leader is essentially Nomar Mazara, it's not a good starting point, really, is it? I mean, oh my goodness, they're so bad. I mean, is it time for them to move on from Alavila? It feels like it has to be, surely.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that they've stuck with him for as long as he has. Because it's not gone well, this rebuild. Obviously, they've got some pitching talent, but I think people have commented on the inability to develop really any position players of note. I know they've got a couple of more exciting guys that they've drafted recently, but a lot of the position players people thought were going to be the core of this rebuild just haven't gone anywhere. Franklin Perez, the guy who they got in the return for Justin Verlander, has basically just been released. That hasn't gone well. And it doesn't really seem like there's a super strong direction to this rebuild. This is not like when the Astros were tanking and everyone was like, oh yeah, but the Astros are going to be really great in 3 or 4 years. You know, nobody's sticking this Tigers team on the cover of Sports Illustrated and saying, here's the 2025 World Series champions, I don't think.
I mean, that's it. You look at that. I'm looking at their depth chart now, and like, you go down to AAA and look at what they've got there, and it's like, I mean, you know, Matt Manning's going to be a good pitcher, but he's probably a middle of the rotation starter. You've got Daz Cameron. He's going to be fine. He's going to be probably a utility major league everydayer. And then you've got like literally people like Drew Hutchison, Ian Kroll, Robbie Ross, Buck Farmer. You know, it's horrible. It's just horrible.
Yeah, I would just, I think it would be harsh to say that Nomar Mazara is their best hitter. I think the one shining light potentially has been like Robbie Grossman at the start of that like lineup. He's got a close to like 20% walk rate, which I think he's shown some of the skills which he had at Oakland last year, and we were uncertain if he should just be a platoon hitter or not, but he's done a reasonable job so far, and Goodrum and Candelario are serviceable players. And then, Wilson Ramos had a good start to the season, hasn't looked particularly good since. Same with Akil Badu.
These guys are all getting traded, though, aren't they, apart from Badu? Badu's just going to hang around all year. He's going to be up and down. He's going to bop some homers, and then Well, I was going to say he's going to be in AAA next year. He's probably not. He's probably going to be starting in left field again, because this is not a proper baseball organization. It's a flipping clown.
I mean, that's the thing. Torkelson will be up next year, but like Riley Green's probably the next most exciting prospect. And, you know, I don't know whether he'll play a significant role in 2022. There's not a lot of guys here who you think like the pitching, maybe, yeah, Mize and Scooble and Manning might be ready next year, but where's the lineup to surround them with?
Are they going to draft Henry Davis at 2 and try and get him into the majors as soon as possible because he's such a high floor guy?
Maybe, probably. Maybe they'll just go out and spend a load of money again like they used to back in the day.
Wrong Illich, mate. That one's dead. Darius, onto your bad.
Well, this is topical because mine's the Royals, who are just on a tremendous losing streak. And I feel bad talking about them in the same breath as the Tigers, really, because I don't think they are as bad, but they're getting beat by the Tigers right now. They lost to the Tigers last night. You just kind of thought, oh, this is what the Royals need to get right, a few games against the Tigers. And that hasn't worked. It's just, it feels really unfortunate because they kind of got everything they needed to like make the surprising challenge. The White Sox had a couple of really big injuries. You know, Cleveland got out to the slow start. Minnesota has just got off to a dreadful start. And you're like, here we go. You know, this is the chance for a surprise division winner. The Royals, it's wide open for them. And they're about to blow their 11th game in a row and have just immediately tossed that whole start away. So I never thought they were going to win the division, but I kind of hoped that the challenge would last a little bit longer than it has.
Also, Daniel Lynch has been absolutely awful. he's kind of been proof that not every highly amped prospect just comes up and is brilliant right away, which it has seemed like lately, because so many of them have come up and made such a like an immediate impact that you kind of forget that the majority of long tenured major leaguers had at least some vacillation between AAA and major leagues. It's kind of reminded you that that's a thing. Yeah, they've been awful.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very aggressive promotion as well. Like, he's hardly spent any time at Able, really, let alone, you know, he's never seen AA or AAA. So, to be fair to Lynch, I'm sure it's a rough introduction, but I'm not quite sure why the Royals are just letting him wear this instead of giving him a bit more time at the minor leagues.
Yeah, he after tonight's shilling, he has a 15.75 ERA. So... that's not what's out there, but we talked about Corbin Burns earlier on. Like, it's not unheard of for people to turn these things around. But Eddie, you're right. Like, it was good to see the Royals do well, and the Royals played the game slightly differently. A little bit you could say it's a little bit small ball style, but it's not worked. Like, Merrifield's done well, Santana's done well, I think Perez has done well. And I would probably think Benatendi's done all right with the bat as well, but like Salah's been pretty awful, which is not what they need to kind of like to do well. And yeah, the pitching side, it's not pretty.
Cool. So I am going to talk in my first bad about terrible outfield defense. So I was initially just going to talk about a play by Harrison Bader from yesterday evening, which allowed Lorenzo Cain to score a sac fly from second base. If you haven't seen this, then do go away and have a look for it. I'm trying to describe it to you. He basically is running backwards, tracking a fly ball from Travis Shaw, completely loses his footing on the warning track, falls over, still manages to sort of reach out and catch the ball, drops it in transferring the ball from his glove to his hand, sort of stumbles as he's standing up, pump fakes it, and, you know, in the meantime, Lorenzo Cain's halfway from third base to home plate. It's genuinely sort of wacky racist stuff, but I just had a sort of sly glance at our Twitter, and I kind of can't let pass this. I don't know if anyone's seen this play in the Phillies Nats game that happened last night as well, where Harper and I don't know who's playing center field just run into each other, and the ball goes in between them. It's absolutely terrible. And then this evening, Didi Gregorius has literally thrown his glove at the ball, trying to stop it going past him. So, I mean, obviously he's not an outfielder, but yeah, bad outfield defense. There's been some really, really shocking ones this week. Have a look out, particularly for that. I think it's on MLB Film Room as Lorenzo Cain heads up running or something like that. But we'll link to it because it's really all about the Buster Keaton-esque performance from Harrison Bader in center field. Okay, good, Russell.
Good. Tim Anderson. Obviously, he's just a fantastic guy to watch when, like, the game's going ahead, but I want to specifically call out one utterly stupid, fun, fantastic thing that he did, like, last week, which I wouldn't imagine, like, many other players had doing. So there was a moment where the ump kind of called time during, like, the throw, and so the pitcher kind of gave up during the throw and looped something that was going, like, about 10 foot in the air over home plate and going behind. It was completely nothing happening. Tim Anderson could have done nothing at it, but he kind of lifted up the bat and, like, tried to hack at the ball 10 feet in the air like it was a piñata at a kid's party that had just been cruelly pulled out of reach by the parent who was in charge. And it just made me laugh. And I don't... Although there are some, like, fantastic, like, players out there who have, like, will do similar sort of things, I just don't think anybody else is quite there in, like, in the Tim Anderson territory of just doing these things that it makes me smile when I watch the game. And it was just so funny. And he's still having a good season, like, as well. He hit another home run, leadoff home run today. So that's all good stuff. But yeah, it's just so fun to watch.
Tim Anderson is the best. No further comment needed. Darius, over to you for a good.
I'm taking the Mariners calling up Jared Kelnick and Logan Gilbert. Service time suppression is bad, but I don't need to put that in. The fact that they're actually here is great. I'm sure people have heard plenty about Kelnick already this offseason. Should be just a really outstanding hitter, and the Mariners could sure use a third outfielder to really shore up that lineup. So I think he's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And Gilbert, yeah, he could be a genuine ace himself. You know, he's a big guy, 6'6". I think he's going to have a fun Arsenal. Unfortunately, they're debuting at 3:10 a.m. tonight, but if you are a night owl, then you can stay up and watch that, or, you know, just wake up really early. I don't know. There'll be plenty of them to see. I think these two are both going to be part of this Mariners team for a long time. So let's see if they can build around them. But I think it's good that the Mariners have actually called up these guys after their important week in AAA.
Yeah, they had a really good time. I mean, it did at least give us the opportunity to be very indignant when Kelnick hit that absolute piss missile, like, basically, like, completely flat at, like, 8 feet from the ground, directly out into the night in Tacoma. Just unbelievable.
Yeah. Was this pointless? Yes, it was.
Yes, it was. And he sort of pretty much did the Yanaga Fjortov around the bases. Like, why am I here?
Sorry, he's got to work on his defense. He's not ready.
He certainly does.
I would point people to a great piece by Sarah Langs today, which is on MLB, which talks about, like, pair of call-ups like this, and saying that in the history of having, like, the top 100 rankings, which is only going back to, like, 2004, there's only been two other days where two top 100 players are going to debut on the same day for the same team. And, like, the others being Manuel Margot and Hunter Renfroe for the Padres back in 2016, and Christian Yelich and Jake Marisnik for the Marlins back in, like, 2013. So
who'd ever have thought that they would have been bracketed? Like, I never knew that they were there, such bedfellows. I did know about Renfroe and Margot. Okay, so, well, ironically or coincidentally, I'm going to talk about, you know, the yin to the yang. My good is also outfield defense, specifically Hunter Renfroe. It's almost like we planned that, like we hadn't. you know, outfield defense is really hard. I have got absolutely terrible depth perception. It's not just because I wear glasses that I need to wear all the time, although that's part of it. I've tried to play outfield in softball and I just can't do it. I don't know where the ball is. I can't get in the right place to catch it. it's really, really hard. And it's taken for granted that these guys just catch absolutely everything. Not only do they do that, but then they throw the ball absolutely on a dot for like 100 yards at 100 miles an hour. It's ridiculous. It's one of the most taken for granted things in the game. You know, you see a guy throw the ball in from center field to home plate and he misses by 6 feet either side. And we go, oh, that's terrible. It's not. Like, it's incredible. And like, so I particularly want to talk about two players from last night, today being Thursday. The Hunter Renfrow throw when Alex Verdugo does lose track of the ball and it bounces over his head. And Renfrow just cuts down Matt Olson trying to turn it into a triple. It's incredible. Like, the heads up ability to track the fact that his guy has missed the ball and then make that play. And also the other one, Kyle Schwarber, not known as a great defender, but throwing an absolute rope from left field last night against the Phillies to get the out at home plate. Outfield defense is really, really cool. And it's not just about Kevin Pillar getting a bad hop and having to lay himself out to take a spectacular catch. It's not just about Kevin Kiermaier making spectacular plays every single day. Sure, it is about that because, fuck me, fucking hell, Kev, it is about that. But it's also about things that are routine but are really hard and really, really cool. So that's me. Back to bad. Russell.
This is a Homer one for me, but whoever seems to play first base for Cleveland on the day just has like an absolute third of a game. I think the current WRC plus for first baseman for Cleveland is 39. So that gives you some idea of like how poor it is. And this is actually something that's like league-wide. Like the concept of like the slugging like first baseman seems to have disappeared or got lost. We have some teams that have some utterly awful times. So yeah, so Cleveland have 39. New York, obviously now they've got Voit back, it may change, but 43 WRC plus. Seattle 51. Boston 58. Detroit 71. Washington 75. This is like your first baseman is supposed to be like one of the hardest hitting and one of like your best hitters, because there is an amazing amount of defensive influence they can have on the game. But for a lot of these teams, and it's really going to annoy me, I think it was Travis who writes for The Ringer, who's called Travis, I'm completely drawing a blank of the name, did a piece that was showing that quite a lot of these teams are actually... So quite a lot of these teams have actually had like six players play at first base this year. I think it's only Pete Alonso is the only person who has played all their games in first base this season. This is supposed to be like a slugging position. And it's seemingly like a blind spot in how teams are doing things.
Yeah, it seems to be a thing that's evolving too, right? First basemen either are just crap or don't hit dingers anymore. Certainly the case in Boston, where apparently that's all that guy does. Only he doesn't. Don't mention it to me, because I may or may not have said that he would. I'm just a know nothing prick. Darius, what's been bad for you?
I'm going to talk about something that got a bit of like, you know, ha-ha reaction on social media last night. And that's the Taiwan Walker, Matt Harvey at bat, where Harvey just threw basically three straight fastballs down the pipe and Walker clearly wasn't taking his bat off his shoulder. And I've seen people say, you know, I think Walker maybe had a little injury scare the inning before saying, and so they didn't want him to swing, or I don't really care. I don't really think this is that funny. This is a professional league. No plate appearances should be ending in this way. Absolutely ludicrous stuff. If you can't go up there and take a hack at a fastball down the middle, then get off the field. I'm not having it.
Amen, brother. In the words of Hulk Hogan. So mine is going to be similarly short but sweet. Just get fucking vaccinated. Okay, over to good. Russell.
Good things coming out of Houston, it looks like, which is a bizarre thing to say.
A rarity.
Yeah, but it looks like Houston have decided to actually pay and put up all of their minor league players, which to me seems such a simple and easy win that I have no idea why none of the other teams do it. I think Houston are in a unique circumstance now that they actually own all of their minor league teams, and I don't know if anybody else actually does that. So I think they're in a position here to gain a lot of what is a fairly simple market inefficiency of like feeding your team well, making sure they sleep properly, making sure they don't have to worry about these sorts of things when they're doing things. So it's great that a team is doing this. It's also kind of dumb that a team even has to, that it's great that a team is doing this. Like, to me, it seems to be, should be such a basic factor of what they're doing, but it's at least good to see somebody do it.
Yeah, totally agree. It's amazing. You know, it, as you said, it's a complete market inefficiency. I mean, like, even if you want to place to one side the sort of moral argument for this, which, by the way, don't, like, think about the economic one. If you are Houston and you're sort of looking at the end of the draft and the bottom end of the draft and thinking about the talent and whether it's going to sign for you as opposed to somebody else, or you want to pick up a load of non-drafted free agents. I mean, we saw what happened with the Royals last year. They had their pick. Anyone who was a non-drafted free agent, who was going to get a really low signing bonus because they weren't picked in the draft, wanted to go to the Royals because the Royals pay their minor leaguers better than anybody else. You know, it makes sense. You know, this is good for your baseball club. It's good for talent development, and it's just good full stop. Why is this the only club doing it? It's ludicrous. Okay, Darius is just nodding at me. It's like I've got nothing to add. He's just
I
losing.
I fully agree. I was going to bring this up if Russell didn't, but yeah, I'm sure other teams will follow now. I'm glad that the Astros have done something that we can praise them for, because we, God knows, we've given them enough bashing on this podcast over the last couple of years.
They've had a few garlands in the last few weeks. That and their pitching development. You know, we talked about, you know, anyone, everyone's on ice now, including Kent Emmanuel. Who even is that? Okay, Darius, your second good.
Well, this is really for you, John, but I'm picking Patrick Mazeika, or should I say John McGee, backup catcher for the New York Mets. Just, I honestly think he must have seen a picture of you and thought, yeah, I'm going to imitate this guy on the field. If you haven't seen this, get on the Batflips and Nerds Twitter account, because we've been tweeting about it. It's full on wild John look, really, isn't it?
It's definitely me at my worst, I've got to say. I tweeted a picture of me mid-pandemic when I hadn't yet acquired a sort of beard grooming tool, because I used to get that done by a barbering professional. And then, you know, A, they were closed, and B, when they were open, you had to keep a mask on. So, you know, that's sort of a problem when it comes to grooming your face. So, yeah, there's a picture of me with a big beard, wearing a hat that actually belongs to Russell, which I was merely modelling. Yeah, full-on Patrick Mazeika. And I, as I confirmed privately, I do definitely have the same body type. let's just say not athletic. Yeah, that was rather weird. I'm told that apparently they're going to make this point on ESPN's BT Sports show Caps Off this week. I really hope they're having me on.
I really hope they haven't got topless pictures of both you and Patrick Mazeika to share as well.
They've gone straight to Pringle for some sultry shots.
Sultry shots of me and our lad pad from the London series. Yeah, well, Patrick Mazeika himself is just, it's hilarious. Like, he's come up from AA. He's hit two balls against the shift and scored two walk-offs. And he literally does look, as Jake and Jordan from Cespedes Barbecue pointed out, like they literally just found him on the street in Brooklyn and were like, come on, let's play.
I think he's, isn't he the first player to start his career with two Fielder's Choice RBIs, I think.
Amazing. And both of them walk-offs as well, you know. Yeah. what a story that is. Okay, so my good, and it feels like, I'm pleased that you chose Patrick Mazeika, because this feels like, you know, I feel like me coming to you after saying this would have lost some of the poignancy. It's Drew Robinson. Like, good Lord. Like, that guy is just incredible. If you haven't already read Jeff Passan's piece from the autumn about Drew's story, he himself is a major leaguer with the St. Louis Cardinals and with the Texas Rangers, who tried to take his own life last year by shooting himself. He lost an eye and he is playing professional baseball for the Sacramento River Cats of the Giants organization in AAA. And he's got one eye and it is his front eye. He is a left-handed batter. He doesn't have a right eye. And he is playing professional baseball. And he hit a home run in his hometown of Las Vegas this week on Mental Health Awareness Week. I mean, how could you not be romantic about this game, I believe is the line. Just absolutely incredible. That guy is inspirational, wonderful. Just Drew, what a man.
I don't know how he plays because it's his leading eye.
Don't know how he does it.
Like, I can't track a ball at like 45 mile an hour on a bloody softball pitch with two eyes.
Yeah, just, you know, the will of the human mind is a wonderful thing, and I don't think I've ever seen a sporting story like that one. It is just, you know, he is hoping he gets an opportunity to do it on a major league field this year. You know, the Giants are a good team. He'll have to be good enough. It's not going to be a romantic thank you and cup of coffee in September. He's going to have to prove his worth, but, you know, no better way to start than what he's done over the course of the last week. Drew Robinson, you are an absolute inspiration. Okay, I think we're done. Unless anyone's got anything else that they feel like they need to, you know, tear a strip off me about.
We can save that for after the pod, John. Big news. Will Craig, who I mistakenly identified as a member of the Pirates 40-man off roster in the offseason, is now a member of the Pirates
40-man. There you go. From the sublime Drew Robinson to the ridiculous. There is this podcast in a nutshell. Thank you very much for joining us this evening, everyone. I would just like to give another parish notice and point you in the direction of the crowdfunder that our friends Women Baseball UK are doing at the moment to try and get together some kits, some uniforms, subsidised travel for the first ever Women's Baseball League in the UK, or at least the first for a very, very long time. There's some absolutely wonderful people involved in that, not least the indefatigable Doris Hocking, who is as big an inspiration to us over here in the UK as Drew Robinson is to the world of baseball. Go away, give them a few pennies that you can find down the back of the sofa. Their crowdfunder is pretty prominent on our social media, which is at batflips_nerds, if you haven't found it already. Guys, what have you got coming up in the next week or so, Russell?
There should be a piece talking about how this is all Bud Selig's fault. So,
okay,
baseball should have changed 20 years ago. We're living in the repercussions of not making changes 20 years ago. But yeah, that's it's taken a bit of time because I want to write it right and not just be I hate Bud Selig, because that's a fairly simple piece to write.
Finally, Rob Manfred's off the hook.
I was going to say, there
I
you
know,
go.
It feels like sacrilegious to almost say that, but it's almost like when you, I feel like he's been handed like the poisoned chalice to a certain extent.
There you go. Bud Selig is bad. A new and original take. You heard it here first on batflipsandnerds.com. Darius, bail us out of this nonsense.
I'm obviously over at Baseball Prospectus, mostly writing about stolen bases these days. You know, in this dearth of action, we get just constant no-hitters. What everybody wants is action. So all I talk about is stolen bases now. So go over there and check my workout.
You really are the new Jeff Fry. The game's just evolving, Jeff. Get over it. Go mow your bloody lawn. It's the end of that. Bye, everyone. See you again another time.